Robert Scott
the
Bell
Robert
Show.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Because when you give people freedom, you let people do whatever they want to do, they actually find ways to succeed and grow and thrive. But as soon as you put the boots to them, as soon as you tell them, you have to do this or you can't do that, you have to listen to me, now you have a mini dictator. You right. have one step away from a king. You have a one step closer. You're moving one step closer to dictatorship. That's what the fuck is happening. That's what's going to happen with a vaccine passport. That's what's going to happen if they close borders. You can't enter New York City unless you have your papers. You can't go to here unless you have that. You can't get on a plane unless you do what I say. And people say, well, it's all about protecting people from the... No, it's not.
Well, that's Joe Rogan. He's nailed it there, Super Don. And I have to say, you know, we need more awareness of the charade or charade that is the mandates, the blackouts, the blackdowns, the white downs, the red downs, the tie downs. What are they calling this thing anymore? Lockdowns? Oh, I remember it now. I'm so over it that I can't even remember what it is. It's like, have you been desensitized yet? I mean, you're predicting things and you're being right about
pretty
it.
Pretty much. I'll be, yeah. I mean, how can you not be to a certain extent? I mean, you have two choices. You either A, kind of desensitize yourself to it so that you don't go crazy, or B, you are just in a constant state of fear. Disgust or whatever, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, for me, it's just, I am ready for the day when, we don't talk about coronavirus anymore.
What day will that be? Do you have a prediction on that?
I don't. And that's depressing. I don't at this point. I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel yet. I thought I did, but yeah. I don't.
Well, we'll cover some stories today on people basically fed up. It's not, using French terms in a bad accent, fait accompli, right? That we're all toast, we're all done, it's history, there's nothing we can do. There are more people by the day, I believe, Super Don, I really do, more people by the day are coming our direction than the other way around. I don't see a lot of evidence that people have come to the conclusion that they're being played for other nefarious purposes to lock down on freedom, that are suddenly waking up one day, oh, man, I was so wrong. They are in it for benevolence and kindness and lovingness, and I'm going to get the shot, and I'm all in on the mask. I just don't see the reverse happening. Does that make sense? You've got a trend of what? People waking up. We've got stories about that as well. And, yes, we've also got a trend of the accelerated approval, FDA, Fauci, he's going to say his thing, and there are going to be more mandates. I don't dispute that. That's their intent, and they might get away with it for a while. But I also don't think it's convincing anybody in reality, other than, as we've always said, the few percentage points that are vacillating, that are just waiting and hanging out going, I don't think I want it, but they're not all in on the commitment to principle on the issue of the shots, the jabs, etc. So when the mandates come into force, if they play out as predicted, yes, there'll be a few percentage points more in the vaccine so-called column, but it's not going to convince the, I think, more than 20%, maybe 25, maybe 27, 28% of adults that go, it's not happening, no how, never. And you can do me some math on this, the story about the sheriffs in coming up, Super Don, and we're going to talk about in San Francisco. Do the math and get the percentage of sheriffs that don't want it compared to those that have gotten it already. Just to see if it matches up with the overall stubbornness, if you will, or obstinance to not get the shot. And as we go into what the COVID-19 burden is doing, by the way, welcome anybody who is listening to me hosting Richard Pearl's show. He has this Richard Pearl on Politics Monday through Friday, and he's asked me to host Taking Time Off, and the story will come out eventually when he's ready to share what's going on. But there is genuinely a lot of disgust over what we've all been going through. Now, granted, not everybody sees it the same way I do or you do or we do. But the question is, what is the response? What do we do now, looking out and going, as Super Don just said, I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel now, right? Suddenly you're like, I thought we were out of this, and now they're coming back with variants, coming back with different vax, different mandates. They're going to approve it, FDA. It's obviously not over. You can't rest and go, like in Florida, where DeSantis is going to the state school board superintendent and saying, you know what, if you try to mandate the kids in your school district and schools wear masks, we're going to dock your pay. Now, I said on Richard's show, I said, I kind of like that. At the same time, my concern long term is that if a governor can just basically do that, who you like, what about when a governor comes in after DeSantis in Florida that you don't like, that maybe a Democrat, maybe a totalitarian socialist? And they'll say, well, you applauded when DeSantis did it, came in and dictated to our local schools what they could or could not do. And it comes back to as well, the standing up as a mom or a dad, as a parent, to say, no, we're not letting you get away with this. We're going to replace the school board, fire you, whatever, or pull your kids out and become homeschooling families and get together with homeschool cooperative. All right, Super D, we got a second Joe Rogan clip. I like the Rogan clip you played, dude. He was really on, pointing out some important things and to a big audience. I'm sure he's getting some blowback on that. I'm not.
And not that he's afraid of that.
No, he's not.
I'm sure there are some employees at Spotify that called an emergency meeting with their management to get that episode removed.
Right, right. And that's the thing. Yeah. We've been banned on Spotify for less than what Rogan just said.
True.
So what's the difference? He's being paid millions. We got nothing from that. Other than a loss of an outlet and more awareness from
we need
you
to
all.
Fire our agent.
Yeah, who's our publicity agent? Well, Rogan goes further here, but in a positive, powerful, and empowering and very logical way. Something that when he says, who's saying that? I'd like to say, hello, hello, McFly. Where have you been, Joe? Where have we been? We've been here the whole time, but he ain't looking at us. So go ahead
but
and play
where
this.
Where are the people out there calling for people to get healthy? Where are the people out there calling for people to lose weight? 78% of the people in the ICU for COVID are obese. 78%. Where's that information being shared? Where's someone who's a leader who gets on TV and says, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to decrease our body mass. We've got to decrease our fat. We've got to make sure that people aren't overweight. We've got to make sure that people are healthy. Walk around your block. You don't have to do something complicated. Start drinking more water. Stop eating sugar. Start taking vitamins. You can increase the strength of your immune system. We can fight things off better. We can be a healthier civilization. Better for everybody, right? Yeah. You don't hear a peep. All you hear is take this vaccine that doesn't even prevent you from getting the disease, or you can't go to the sauna or wherever the fuck you want to go. You can't go to the Broadway show. It's madness.
That was Joe Rogan's last podcast. I think that he's been banned from every... Right? That's the kind of crazy stuff that happens now.
We're having trouble locating him.
Joe Rogan has disappeared. What happened to Joe? Like, he's common sense, logic, all that stuff. And go, I know you're a big fan of Joe, and I tease because there are certain times we've covered Joe Rogan, and I'm like, what's wrong with Joe Rogan, right? But more often than not, he's doing really good work out at that level. And in this case, he didn't hold back. He mentioned the vaccine that doesn't even prevent, mentioned that, and it's like, whoa, Spotify banned us. Will they ban Joe Rogan? Prediction, Super Don? Will they ban that episode or ban Joe Rogan?
No, I don't think so. I think Joe's too big to fail at the moment. I think he's got still some wiggle room before something like that would happen.
Really? So they don't feel that it's a concern that Joe Rogan, like the number one podcaster on the planet, says those things that they don't have to desperately somehow ban or censor him?
I don't think so. Because, I mean, listen, what he's saying, though controversial to some, there's a lot of other people that are saying the same thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's something he has to worry about.
Well, a lot of other people, who else is saying it besides us?
With the frustration over the fact that, what was his name? Michael Rappaport? Mm-hmm. You know, that are freaking out over the silliness of if you get the vaccine, you don't have to wear a mask. Wait a minute. Sorry.
Yeah. I was a hero. And now
if you get the vaccine, you carry as much viral load as somebody who didn't get the vaccine. Yeah. That's a common complaint, I think, right now that it's not going
to
stick.
But does Michael Rappaport take it to the next logical level of like I've been played, or does he go?
No, but that's not the first shot. Yeah, but that's not the first time Joe said anything like that. So okay. I think they're, yeah. I know, right. Even though it is very impressive, to hear somebody else saying something like that. It is actually kind of a common theme for him. I mean, let's go back to when he stuck it to Peter Hotez. Remember that? Because, you know, Peter Hotez is like, yeah, you know, I eat fries and I go to the Shake Shack and stuff. And he's like, oh, okay. So you kind of sacrifice Hotez. Your health for some mouth pleasure. Huh?
Yeah.
Don't you think that maybe you should be the one like leading by example? Mm-hmm. You're out there telling people that they got to get vaccines to be healthy, and you're you know, out there eating stuff that's
going to. Is it to the point with Joe Rogan and his millions of viewers that we can hang it up and retire because we've achieved our goal and now everybody knows?
Not at all. Not at all, because Joe is just one guy, and he's, you know, he has a podcast. He's very popular. But even Joe with millions of viewers doesn't have the power to turn the tide on something like that.
Wow. I think the power is within, and the acknowledgement that we recover from our dystopian nightmare one by one by one, not in mass unless you get to the proverbial 100th monkey level. Now, in terms of 100th monkey, 100 violent monkeys, check out this article on study finds about COVID-19's burden leading to more violence at protests, distrust in government. Now, the latter half of this headline is right, as is appropriate. Distrust in government should be your default setting. You know, just as my default setting is freedom, my default setting is also not to trust what the government says unless I can independently validate or verify it. And, you know, that's true of anything. And this is true of this show. If you can't independently verify or validate what me or Super D says, by all means, push back. You know, if we say something that is completely demonstrably wrong, I'd want to know it, because, you know, we're not going to do it intentionally unless it's maybe April Fool's Day just to get a rise out of you, you know. But for the most part, we're pretty straight up on what we believe. Now, when we talk about a COVID-19 burden, it isn't even they're not even talking about the burden of the actual thing that they claim it is, which we know it isn't.
I like this term. I've never heard this before used this way.
What? The COVID-19 burden?
Suffering from are you suffering from COVID-19 burden?
Burden, right. Yeah. But it plays itself out in different ways, like, you know, emotionally, mentally, economically, and I would say spiritually, of course, as well. And, you know, on Richard's show earlier today on his so-called political podcast or radio show, I was talking about, you know, the feeling, something that we've talked about over the years many times, is this swinging between emotional states, right? When we're being manipulated because we're outraged and we're angry, and that angry can lead to violence. It can. It can also stimulate positive action when you're angry. It's like, oh, now I'm angry enough to do something about it, right? And then yet you could swing back and go, oh, I don't feel like I should do anything. Any number of things could go, all right, let's chill out for a minute. Then you go back and you look at it and say, well, the situation hasn't changed. We're still dealing with a bunch of COVID numbnuts and morons and dangerous injections and on it goes, and mandates and prohibitions and masks. And so you get back into that frustrated place, which is understandable, because you feel sort of powerless. It's like, dude, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, like Superdon said. Frustrating! Ah! You know, of course, we've talked about remedies for this. Argentum nitricum, silver nitrate for frustration, stramonium for the anger. And then you are in that frustrated place. You might go back to angry. And you're like, oh, still, I'm not going to do anything. I'm too scared to do something about it, whatever. You go back and you're frustrated again. Nothing's changed! And then at a certain point, as the energy wanes in you from being in that state, you get depressed. The energy weakens. Your life force is diminished. And you're like, oh, I'm so bummed. I don't feel, I'm just, nothing. I can't, you know, it's a defeatist place to be. Not a surrender to God place, where it's a positive thing, where you say, I acknowledge, I feel powerless in this, and I will turn that powerlessness over to God, who has all the power ultimately, our creator. But we're talking about I give up. All right, let's just let, they can do whatever they want with me. I just don't have any energy left. And so the bad guys, so-called bad guys, win at that point, because it isn't the surrender to God. You've now surrendered to man. Not a smart or good place. But then again, it's an exhausting place to be. And you're like, oh, I give up. And so I differentiate between surrender in that sense to surrender to a higher power perspective. Right? Granted, give me the wisdom. What is it, Super Don? To know the things I can control or change and that which I can't. I mean, is that the serenity prayer kind of thing coming out?
Give me the strength to change the things I can, and Dude, the wisdom so to long. Know. I can't, the, well, wisdom, well,
the,
yeah,
the wisdom to know what you can or can't.
All right, hold yeah. on. I, you know what? The Serenity Prayer mm-hmm. is not something to screw up, in my opinion, because it is so important. So it goes, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, mm-hmm. the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay. So what about that first thing that's problematic in this situation? Accept the things I cannot change. Now, if we're looking at, can we go up and stop Fauci single-handedly? No, I mean, and I'm not encouraging people to go in there and beat him with a baseball bat, even if some of you think he deserves it. That's not my point in even bringing that up. But the idea of that's a subtle distinction, an important one, kind of like surrender to man or surrender to God. It's an important distinction. Give me the strength to what? Accept the things I can't change. But is it something that says you must endorse and embrace those things? Can you still work to change them? I don't think we're limited by that serenity prayer to just give up on stuff. That's not what I feel it's telling us, although some people might argue, oh, just it's a victim state of consciousness. I don't perceive it that way. I know some people have different perspectives on that, but if people have gone through addiction, alcohol, or others, it's been a very helpful thing to overcome things. And so it's a step along the way. But if I look back at this article about the COVID-19 burden leading to more violence or violent protest, you know, we've been pointing out Americans are not protesting very well like our European counterparts or Australian and others. And we're disappointed a little bit. At the same time, I'm not thrilled about the thinking even about violent protest, because that's mob mentality, even though a peaceful protest may not feel as, I don't know, gratifying, because it's like, oh, what have we achieved? Right? We did a peaceful protest and we go home. But the solidarity involved in hundreds, if not thousands, tens or hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people locking arms, walking, you know, marching. It's a very powerful image that puts a little bit of fear into globalist elitist scum who are operating in almost every country of the world, certainly all over the West and here in the United States even. And so as we get together and recognize our power one by one, connecting on a common purpose or goal, which would be what? Here it would be to restore freedom, health, freedom, healing, liberty, right? Unencumbered by a government that says you can't breathe without it being restricted. You can't go to a restaurant or a store or whatever, have fun in life unless you have been experimented upon via mRNA type injections or next generation COVID shots, which we'll get to because we have a question of the day on that. But the COVID burden is a very real thing beyond COVID, because we have argued, as I think, and I know, in fact, we're right, there is not one quote unquote virus that has caused all of this at all. It's the illusion. It's the pharmaceutical fantasy. It's the sorcery that has imaged it into reality. And if there's anything that we can find some legitimacy in terms of physicality until it changes or otherwise I learn something, the spike protein seems to be the real issue that was patented in 2002 and that suddenly mysteriously appeared as SARS coronavirus 1 in 2003. And we were on the air covering that here. This was before Superdawn. Me and John Rappaport and others would talk about that. By the way, did we ever find out what happened to Frank Plummer? Did you ever get a dig on that? WHO, Frank Plummer, originally from Canada. Was he killed recently in one of those globalist pharmaceutical coup attempts in Africa?
So when you mentioned it yesterday,
yeah,
I looked up Frank Plummer real quick. He's a Canadian scientist. Does that sound right?
Right. He was doing work for
academic,
the WHO.
He was an HIV AIDS researcher.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, it just shows that he died February 4th of last year.
Okay, how interesting. Where?
And he died, let's see here. It says here, in 2012, Plummer developed liver failure due to alcoholism. He underwent a liver transplant and part of an experimental trial was the first recipient in North America of deep brain stimulation for alcohol use disorder.
Wow.
He died of a heart attack on February 4th, 2020, while visiting Nairobi for the 40th anniversary of the HIV research collaboration.
Okay, so it's an interesting lineage there. Hey, he said a liver transplant?
Liver transplant, mm-hmm. and took place in a clinical trial,
mm-hmm.
And was first recipient in North America of deep brain stimulation for alcohol use disorder.
Wow. So it's fascinating because we were talking about serenity prayer. You know, a lot of alcoholism, right. You know, is responded, you know, well to that. And
12 steps.
And Frank Plummer, of course, was the PhD WHO guy in Canada on the ground, eventually admitting that there was no SARS coronavirus found in any patient that supposedly had the severe acute respiratory syndrome back in Canada all those years ago. So it's an interesting guy. And maybe who knows if he was burdened by cognitive dissonance being in the PhD biofields that identified and claimed that HIV was the cause of all these problems, yet never developing an actual test that was validated and standardized to determine it. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance that could result in psychological and emotional disturbances that could result in emotional, manifestations as alcoholism. I know they say it runs in families, but hey, man, life can, if you're living in conflict with yourself and what you know to be true, it can lead to difficult circumstances that could lead to what? Let me just drink my problems away. Let me drink my dissonance away. It's not unprecedented. So we come back to COVID-19 burden. I don't know. Has there been reports of increased alcoholism and drug addiction in this time? I know there's been an increase.
Absolutely.
In suicide rates,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. Alcohol and drug use, absolutely, 100%.
So this COVID burden that's killing us, killing people, it's not necessarily the coronavirus or even the spike protein. It's the depression that comes from despair and hopelessness.
Self-medication,
trying to
freak out. The pain. They're dealing with, issues of, like you said, loneliness, depression, fear,
you loss have to send of, what? Rice babies?
Lost their jobs. You know, all kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, hugging rice babies is not the same, folks.
Rice babies.
People are fed up with the COVID restrictions, this article of study finds, along with how gauging how COVID is burdening public's daily lives. The team also asked participants to reveal how dissatisfied they are with respective governments and if the frustration to causing them is causing them to attend protests or act violently. And, you know, you'd be lying if you didn't say you had feelings of anger with governments and regulators and individuals, or that you haven't thought of violent responses. You know, that's the thing about anger, Super Don, in the era of political correctness and beyond. You know, we used to say, like on the playground, let's go back to elementary school on the playground, or even middle school, high school. How many times did you hear somebody say, I'm going to kill you, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like a normal part of the vernacular. No one really meant it. But now if you say it, suddenly the police are called, or you know, psychological interrogators are called the drug children,
right,
who say things that used to be a normal part of our upbringing.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is it to be human now is no longer to have the emotions, or if you have them, don't express them, because if you do, they're going to take you away. What was that? They're coming to take me away. Aha. Uh-huh. What was that from?
What was the name of that?
Was that a song or a comedy routine?
No, it's a song.
I don't remember. In the United States, I'll keep reading as you get to that. In the United States specifically, the team finds a strong link between higher COVID burden and participants engaging in violent acts during Black Lives Matter protests and counter-protests. And let's see, the first time we've had a major pandemic, highly individualized Western democracies, according to this. And what are they going to do to repair trust in government? I don't know that they can. I don't know that they could attempt to do so, but it wouldn't work for us. I mean, if we know anything about the history of government on the planet, our founders warned us, don't trust the government. Bind them down with the change of the Constitution. Did you find that song or whatever that was?
It was billed as Napoleon. Was it Napoleon the, what would XIV be?
Napoleon XIV?
The 14th?
Did he say that?
It was a novelty record written and performed by Jerry Samuels back in 1966.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure what it was. We have these things embedded because we've heard them so many times in our lifetime, not knowing where they come from. All right. Back to the article. Researchers find that COVID-19 restrictions add to social exclusion and marginalization as government orders to make normal social activities disappear. All of this, they say, fuels public distrust in government and motivates the most burdened people to engage in political violence. I saw a piece, I think I shared it on Twitter, our friend Tom Woods, who got sick with COVID-like manifestations after going to Las Vegas. And he did a piece on, did you see this? He did a piece on basically going, I don't blame the person who gave it to me. Right? Because there are people out there that are actually going, anybody who didn't get the shot should be guilty of murder or something like that. He's like, dude, we got to stop living our lives as if you live forever. At a certain point, and what is that point? Everybody's point, I guess, might be different, that you go, all right, maybe there is something to this. Okay, you just go, all right, and maybe there is something, some kind of risk associated with going out and breathing in public, on and on it goes, but so what? So what? Not because you're cruel, unkind, insensitive, and want people to die, but you realize that's been the risk for time immemorial, that you live, you die. I say that physically. Your body lives and you don't die. You keep going. But again, that's a whole other discussion. But at what point do we say enough is enough? You're never going to eliminate infectious disease, if you call it that. Ailments, illnesses, life, death, circle of life, cycle of life, web of life, whatever. It just doesn't end unless you stop living. And if you stop living because you're afraid of dying, what's the point of being here? Well, I'm afraid to die. If you go out, I'm going to kill somebody. It's like at a certain point, you're like, man, is this ridiculous? How did we ever fall for this? Throughout history, in fact, even today, every year, and we've talked about this as well, the number one leading cause of death when it comes to infectious disease, tuberculosis. Is it a couple of million a year around the world? A couple of million every year around the world die of TB. Is that true today? If it is, where's COVID fall on that scale? Now, we know that the 600 plus thousand people in America is a scam number, not actually validated or verified. You can validate and verify what I've just said. It's not. The CDC had acknowledged at a certain point and reiterated, what, about 6% of the people only had COVID. Even that is suspect because the test for COVID is crap. And now we find out there are no reference standards or reference materials to test it to be able to prove that it's there, much less doing anything. It's not a quantitative test. It's not evidence of death if you get positive RT-PCR analyses results. But yet we're all acting as if they're right, that they have science on their side. So the burden is on us truly to step up and out of the artificial reality that they've created, or the veil of illusion they've thrown over all of our eyes and senses based on how and what and why. Fear, of course. Fear is the only way they could pull that off. I'm not advocating violence, but I'm advocating righteous defense of your freedom. And if somebody tries to threaten you and take you away, I mean, look, I saw images in France right now, even though there are protests going on in France, of police in bulletproof vests walking up to innocent bystanders just sitting at cafes in France and checking their phone apps or some other ID that validates to their satisfaction that they have been double jabbed by experimental injections in order to be out and actually having a drink or having a meal. Now, for those of you in North America and Canada, in America, in the United States, do you envision what you would do in such circumstances? If the cops came up to you and said, let me see your papers to see that you've been fully injected for COVID. Could you imagine the violence that might ensue in that circumstance where you want to see my what for sitting in a cafe, eating and having a nice glass of Chardonnay, if that's what you do? This is where this article, the scientific article, is maybe accurate in terms of the end stage or end results. If they push hard enough against the freedom of the people in America, the people will lash out, lash back in a violent fashion because they feel that now there has been a violent suppression of their ability to just live, be alive, find little bits of enjoyment here and there to go out and do things with their family, with their friends, with their loved ones. Do you see that as an inevitable consequence if they continue to push and we continue to allow them to push to get to the point where vaccine passports are a way of life, so to speak? If they really go that far, Do they not see that in the United States of America, that that's the point where the lid blows off the top, the boil overflows? And maybe they're counting on it. Maybe they think that if we can get just the 30% or what will be peeled off and might be 28 or 27 or 25% of us, which is still a significant number of people. But I would argue that there are people that have accepted and acquiesced to the experimental shots that also do not believe in these passports and that would defect even having been shot from that viewpoint to come on over to the 25 or so percent of us that say no way, no how, not a chance in your hell. And they might join us as well and say, you know what, it's gone too far. And then what? What is the government willing to do? What are the people in government willing to do? What are our military members willing to do? I've been talking to folks in the military, behind the scenes, individuals, not higher up brass or anything, about the willingness by many who have become career folks within the armed forces, including the Coast Guard, to walk away from their careers if they are given no option but to get the jab or else. What happens? Those are the people that still have critical thinking skills intact. If they eliminate all of those people, who's left? What's left? Think about that. So when you think about halting the mandates, because as Superdon has predicted, once the FDA gives a premature approval, full-on authorization and licensure, even though it's going through clinical trials, oh, they'll say it's, well, the real-world data. Ignoring VAERS. They've already distanced themselves from VAERS, the only system set up for FDA and CDC to monitor adverse events, and they deny that it has anything to do with anything. And they'll go, oh, yeah, it's real-world data shows this is great. Great stuff. Let's go ahead and get it licensed and approved so those few percentage points, we can peel them off, get them shot up, and then we can institute these mandates. The more they get closer to actual mandates, the more the inevitability is of violent repercussions. Remember we said as long as there was a way to say no, you could say, well, why should I become violent? I still could just walk away from it and do something else. It's not convenient. I'm not really excited about it, but they haven't said I can't walk away and do something else. But the moment they eliminate that as an option and completely corner you like a wounded, you know what, a caged, you know what, at that point, who would judge somebody to say, you know what, now you've gone so far, you've like entered my home and said, I cannot leave it. And you've stationed guards outside the door and I can't leave. And if I can't leave, now you've threatened not only my property and my liberty, my life itself. And if we don't stop those mandates before they apparently at this point inevitably come down, in other words, they could say they're mandated, but you could push back before it becomes entrenched into the not only the body politic, but the genetic makeup of the Americans still alive. To move forward and make decisions so that we don't have to wait until it becomes a violent inevitability of you're going to have to fight for your life. We've had it easy. We've become soft. It's true. Who has to grow their own food and hunt for their own food in order to eat every day? It's still a choice, isn't it? For the most part. What happens when it's not? Are you prepared for that? If that's where it's going, as some predict. Like I said, I don't pretend to be a prophet in this case. I've acknowledged things that I predicted and I've been right about, but it isn't about me. It's about tapping into the information available to all of us and seeing patterns emerge and repeat and saying, yep, this is likely to happen. It's fascinating, yet it's also maddening. We'll go into the court system in the show notes today at robertscottbell.com. An Ohio judge orders a man to get a COVID-19 shot as part of his sentence. Is this a rerun? We covered this a while back. Is this a new story?
This is a new story. A couple of months ago, we covered a story where it was an Ohio judge that made it getting the vaccine a part of somebody's probation.
It would reduce it or somehow, yeah.
And in this particular case, it took place as another judge in Ohio, and mm-hmm. I think there may be even another judge that's used something like this where it was a sentencing.
Yeah.
And part of the sentencing was that they had to get the vaccine.
Which, yeah. Again, experimental use. But even if it's fully licensed and approved, how do you mandate that and say, well, we're giving you the choice. You don't have to get it. I can give you an extra sentence. But again, that's not fully informed consent because there's a consequence to saying no to the shot or the jab. And so if the judges are doing this, where are the judges? What have we said here about judges? They, by and large, have become the enforcement wing, even though they're not so-called police force wing, but they are interpreted to be the law, right? And they become the enforcers for the pharmaceutical church. You know, as if the Vatican took over and made everybody a Catholic who didn't want to be a Catholic, and if they didn't, they would be subject to all of the violent repercussions back in the Crusades, for instance, or something like that. And the judges are taking part in this church-like violation of the First Amendment in establishing a state-sanctioned religion and enforcing it through the court system.
Sacrament. And what's interesting in these situations, and in the previous story, if I recall correctly, the lawyers are looking at this and they're going, this doesn't seem exactly legal.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, I believe the attorney quoted in the article, and he's saying, no, I don't suspect that if my client chose not to get the vaccination, that there would be anything that would happen from it. But he says that, you know, technically the judge would be able then to extend his sentence or, you know, do something, you know, as a result of it. And if that happened, then it would become something where he probably would be challenged.
Yeah. Based on
it's almost prevention. Like these judges are kind of getting away with it, for now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that definitely seems like that's beyond the scope of what a judge should be able to do, especially when it's an experimental thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if this were an FDA approved thing, that might change things. I don't know, but it still would be unusual.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be easier for them to try and get away with it, but still violating the Nuremberg Code in such circumstances, it used to mean something. Now, apparently, you can be banned for bringing up the Nuremberg Code. Because even if it is fully licensed and approved, which is predicted to happen, regardless of status of clinical trials still being done.
No.
You have what? You have the forceful injection of something against somebody's will, or with the ability to say no, but with consequences, which is, again, not fully informed consent. And it violates that code. Even if it is a criminal that they're doing it to, because you can't, there's no ability as a criminal to be able to have informed consent because you're a prisoner. That's not good. By the way, Brian Hooker joins us hour two. Very excited to have him back on. We're going to be talking about a new peer-reviewed published journal article by him and Neil Miller on follow-ups to well baby visits and vaccines and SIDS. The percentages are shocking. Not maybe for you here, but still the general population. If they heard this, they might be with pitchforks at their pediatrician's office next. We'll see what happens there. Let's see. FDA approval. We'll talk about that. You know, I want to pause for a moment just to say, hey, thank you to our friends at Nutritional Frontiers, because I'm getting through this, all this insanity, with my certified organic U.S. grown hemp CBD extract. CBDNF.com. CBDNF.com. How are you doing on that? Do you have enough there? Are you still okay with it? Have you given any to the dogs yet? What's going on?
I'm good.
You got yours too? Yeah.
I got mine.
Yeah.
I got mine over on the shelf over there too.
And man, amazing with the transdermal application of their CBD. CBDNF.com. Use the code RSB15 when you order. If you haven't signed up to become a customer of Nutritional Frontiers yet, do so and they'll send you a thank you package, including some samples that you can try. What are you shaking there?
My maraca.
Yeah.
They call me Cuban Pete. Yeah.
Cultural appropriation, Super Don.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
So where are we at in the rundown here? Because we've talked about the FDA approval already, haven't we?
Not really. I mean, I was going to get to it, but we don't have to do a lot with it. I mean, I've sort of teased it and woven it into the monologue today because it's just it's hard to differentiate.
It's more of the same, and I will admit I have included this somewhat selfishly.
Okay.
Because this is something that I've said all along that I think is going to happen. Although I do like this headline. It was a very curious headline. This is what got my attention, because it says FDA approval of the COVID-19 vaccine could mean more people will get vaccinated for an unexpected reason. And I'm like,
what?
I thought we'd covered pretty much everything that's out there. But this was an unexpected reason. So I had to go and read it because I'm like, well, I got to see what this unexpected reason is. I read it. I couldn't find it.
You and me both. We were going through this earlier. I'm like, what's the unexpected reason? Who got this headline passed? What's the unexpected? I still don't know.
Clickbait.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they never say this is the unexpected reason. So, you know, like, are we just dumb? We can't see what the unexpected reason is.
Well, we can speculate, which we've done. That when the FDA does, you know, when they give the stamp of approval on this thing, that you're going to have a certain number of people that are going to believe it or not, and I think this is true. I don't know how many they guess in this article it'd be 5 to 10%. Of people that as soon as, like, you know, Don Lemon gets on CNN and he goes, breaking news, the FDA has now approved the Pfizer vaccine, that there are maybe 5 to 10% of people then would go, oh, okay, finally. And they'd run down to Walgreens and get the shot simply because, now, yesterday it wasn't approved, wasn't going to get it. Don't trust it.
Yeah.
Today, if they say it's approved, now I trust it. Now it's great. I'm
so they call it a psychological barrier that they'll be able
pretty
to overcome.
Pretty much.
But they come back to the carrots and the sticks with super emphasis on sticks. Mandates are everything for them. These people do not believe in intelligent discussion, intellectual debate, critical thinking, and cognitive integrity. They're all about what we can do. Once we get this mandate, well, let's say once we get the approval by the FDA, like mandates are bust.
Yep.
They say
and that
this,
goes actually, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm reading this guy, Eric Nesbitt, Owen L. Kuhn, endowed professor of policy analysis and communication, director of the Center for Communications and Public Policy in the School of Communications of Northwestern University. That's a lot. If you ever want to get beyond 70% threshold, he says, of people who have gotten a vaccination so far, you need to have carrots and you need to have sticks. Nesbitt said, the only way to do that is the mandate. Authorization takes out one of the impediments to more widespread mandates. This is all about violent force. No outlets, no excuses, no exemptions, mandate, mandate, mandate. These people do not believe in freedom. Now, that used to be problematic. It used to be obvious why we would not want to follow mandates. But now in the era of fear the virus, fear the invisible, phony scamdemics that people are programmed to believe are real based on no scientific verification or validation. Other than a lot of people did get sick. Some people died. But validating the cause, not important. In fact, if you try to dispute the cause, we'll ban you, we'll censor you. You could be a medical doctor especially. We're coming after you. We're going to shut you down. If you say there's a treatment that involves drugs or not drugs, as long as it's not a new, well, if it's not a new drug, you're done. You're toast. Your history. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, you can't do that. Because it would eliminate the emergency use authorization for, guess what? Not only the shot itself, but the what did they rush into use? The drug, remdesivir? Brand spanking new with all of the profit embedded into that, but not with the generic thing like hydroxy or ivermectin, which you can still get down at the local horse and feed tack shop, right? Ivermectin is available to anybody then. I have a horse. I eat like a horse. I should get this. Go ahead, right? So what does approval mean for kids? Well, it'll make it easier perhaps for them to expand to younger and younger ages. See, it is FDA licensed and approved. What are you crying about? What are you worried about? Right? Absolutely astonishing. And of course, Fauci predicts, as Super Don does too, a flood of COVID-19 mandates after full FDA approval. I mean, they are just lusting after this approval, despite the fact that the clinical trials are still underway and will be for another year or two. Doesn't matter. This is annoying to me, and you know that, Super D, you bring it up. It's like,
I know.
They go, well, it's real world data. And they make the data up. They ignore what they don't want.
What they're going to do is they're going to say that the, and I'm just, I know I sound like a broken record, but I'm going to say it anyway just because you brought it up.
Yeah.
That they're going to look at the data they already have with the clinical trials that have already taken place. They're going to look at the data that they have, and what they're going to say, they're going to be real world results. Basically, what they've done with people getting the vaccine over the last couple of months or 3 months, whatever it's been, they're going to look at that as part of basic, like a real world clinical trial, right? And they're going to look at the numbers and they're going to go, yep, it looks like the, you know, this is okay. And then the trials that are going on now, I think are going to shift to what's the name of it when something
post-marketing gets surveillance.
That's what it's going to turn into at that point. And then what you're going to have is you're going to have all of these businesses, these retail places, you know, restaurants, sporting arenas, yada, 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 yada. All of them are waiting on this at this point. And it's going to be the hip ultimate virtue signaling, you know, step that these places are going to take to because it's just the thing to do, right? It's the right thing to do.
So disappointing. Yet, maybe inevitable, temporarily, hopefully only at worst.
It'll be temporary. It will be temporary. I mean, it's not going to be a forever thing, I don't think.
No, I mean, they'd like it to be. But remember, all of this made possible by our fear of germs, by that son of a you-know-what, Louis Pasteur.
It's unfortunate. And our fear of germs. The tide has turned. You know, the pendulum has swung, I believe, in this direction. And that's just what you're going to see. Yeah. So now you're going to have what Fauci has said. To Americas, right? You're going to still have some places that are not going to do this, but who knows where that's going to go? I mean, look at what the government's doing right now. Mm-hmm. They're tightening the screws on people, right?
Well,
it's like, well, if you don't do this, we're gonna. So, what's going to happen to these businesses if they don't do the whole vaccine passport thing or the health pass thing?
Well, they might be shut down. And that's at a certain
local
point,
governments, state governments, are they going to go after these businesses and make it impossible for them to operate?
Well, and here's where you have Republicans fall down on their high ideals of freedom. They're like, we believe in freedom so much that we'll give artificial creations of the state the freedom to deny freedom to other Americans who want to use their services or products. That's a failure of Republicans, not Democrats at that point. They are arguing in red states for the freedom of corporations to deny service, segregate people who have not gotten the experimental jab that Republicans say you shouldn't be forced to have. Isn't that weird? Is there a cognitive dissonance there a little bit?
All I can say is the next couple of months, I think, are going to be, we're going to have plenty to talk about.
Yet more interesting by the day. All right, yeah. Brian Hooker joining us top of the hour. Right now, let's take a pause for a question of the day. All right, this question of the day is coming from Diana. She says, I've heard that Nova is a traditional vax. What are your thoughts on that over the others? If the Gestapo leaves one with no choice one day. Diana, this question annoys me to no end. Not that I'm not annoyed with you, Diana, and it's like you're not the only one asking things like this.
That's the whole reason why I put it in there.
Yeah, you're so nice to me, Super D. That's the thing. You come out of what you went through, and now you're like just curmudgeonly even more. So what are we to do with this question that Diana asked? Because first off,
let's go with the first question. Okay. What is it? Okay, and I was unfamiliar with it, so I had to look it up.
You have the visual, or you have a link for me to open up? What do you think?
Here.
All right.
This is a New York Times article that I found that describes this Novavax is, because we've heard of Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J and AstraZeneca, but Novavax, apparently they're going to be applying for emergency use authorization at the end of the year.
Right. They don't learn anything about it's PR and marketing 101 about
naming
something.
They're kind of late to the party here. Yeah. I don't know how they're going to be able to try and compete. So basically, here's what it boils down to. The Novavax operates similar to old vaccine technology in that the Novavax works is supposed to work by teaching the immune system to make antibodies to the spike protein that's on the COVID-19 virus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what separates the Novavax from the others. And I think just on weird factor, they should be like at the top of the list. They should win. I think they win, okay? Because apparently, to create their vaccine, Novavax researchers started with a modified spike gene, and they inserted this into, I don't know what a baculovirus is, but they took this baculovirus with the modified spike gene in it, and they allowed it to infect, get this, a moth cell.
Mm-hmm. Godzilla versus Mothra.
A moth cell. I've never heard of a vaccine using moth cells that they've used, like bovine and chimpanzee.
Yeah, so they're basically like harvesting spike proteins from the moth cells, assembling them into nanoparticles, and basically then injecting those things into the muscles of the arm. Hopefully it'll stay there, but we've seen evidence that they don't stay there. They do that with a compound extracted from the soap bark tree. The compound attracts immune cells to the site. So basically it's an immune adjuvant, like we've talked about, aggravators of the immune system.
I know, that's so boring. Let's go back to the cool part. Moth cells.
Moth cells. No, we got
moth cells.
Look.
Moth. What? Yeah. But apparently this is not new, because apparently I guess they've used this similar technique when they've tried to create vaccines or when they have actually licensed vaccines for like influenza and HPV. But a moth.
Yeah.
That's kind of
so
cool.
How many millions or hundreds of millions or billions of spike proteins are they injecting? If we indeed conclude, as we have until further information is available to us, that the spike protein initially patented in 2002 is not the cause, but if that's where we're at and they're saying let's inject the spike proteins, they don't have the capacity or track record of limiting their activity to the area of injection, as we've seen other aspects of evidence of non-injection site spike protein activity or presence. And at that point, what have we seen about the spike protein damaging the monocellular lining of the endothelium of the vascular system, damaging the heart, lung tissue? Any tissue could be damaged by these things. Like when you talk about a single cell, a spike protein, even measured on the nanoscale, can be devastating to a healthy mammalian cell at that point. And so is this better? You know, as the question is asked by Diana, well, you know, marginally you might say, because it's not an mRNA vax or shot, but it's a Kobayashi Maru scenario for those of you Star Trek nerds out there. You know what I'm talking about, where they're saying, I have to accept it. If the Gestapo leaves one with no choice, you always have a choice. I don't accept. I'm like Captain Kirk in that way, Super Don. You know that. I don't accept the Kobayashi Maru scenario. What is that? Mothra? Did you really need to show us Mothra? That's not going to help.
Come on, let's get back to the cool part of this here. You're getting all weird and eggheady.
I'm not.
It's a moth. A moth cell. Does it irritate you that I'm so fast? I think I'm almost like having like
What irritates me is that I'm not the one.
It's a moth cell.
It's irritating that I'm not the one doing Mothra. You get to, and I'm having to be the serious guy trying to make a reasonable answer to a question that is sincere from Diana.
All right. Okay.
So let's go to a comment of the day. Here we go. Wait, where'd it go? There it is, I think. All right, comment of the day. This is from Nadine. So sorry, I will miss you when you are in the D.C. area. That's September 21st, by the way. The District of Criminals will not go into the district that I know of, but around it, pretty close. She says, so sorry, I'll miss you when you're there on September 21st. She's in Baltimore, Nadine says. My oldest is turning 19, and we will be camping on Assateague Island that week to celebrate. Best wishes for a great turnout. Thanks for filling me in on all the news that I can't bring myself to listen to. I would much rather hear it from you and Super D, Nadine. All right. She just made my day again. That was nice of her. Because, you know, we talk about all the stories we got to cover, Super D, and they're not thrill-a-minute stories. I mean, it's like the COVID burden scenario, right? Talking about it. We don't want to get people bogged down in this. We're trying to find ways out of it, through it, around it, all of that. And yet, I always keep coming back to the within factor, that even with all of the scientific knowledge we have or have assembled, talk about an Avenger, Brian Hooker joining us in hour two. Even with all of those Avengers assembled that really do good science, we have still got to stay and reconnect and stay strong in our faith and our belief and our connection to God, our creator. Because so much of the illusion that is foisted upon us, it's really not coming from God, but coming from man altering God's message or eliminating it altogether. And it is our ability to see through this, to survive through this, to thrive through this, is not by energizing those enemies of freedom, but by withdrawing consent. Pointing out, as the emperor wears no clothes scenario, defanging them by showing them for the frauds that they are, the fools, the knaves, the embarrassment that they are, and claiming the things that they do. Not trying to deny anybody what they see or feel or experience, as even Super Don has experienced a brutal, let's say, temporary setback as his immune system was challenged, perhaps by spike proteins. But to recognize that we should not shut down all of life and stop living and stop enjoying and stop being grateful and stop worshiping and stop dancing and singing and hugging and loving one another because of the fear of the invisible, or in this case, the fear of patented spike proteins from 2002 manifesting in the guise of mRNA or non-mRNA shots. I believe we have an obligation, a right duty and obligation, to stand up when we see that the emperor is butt ugly and naked, and if happens to be medical or scientific emperors, so be it. Call them out, ridicule them as they've tried to ridicule us, not because you're wanting to dance on them and make fun of them, but because you recognize the danger, the clear and present danger that they are to not only you or me, but to our children and perhaps our grandchildren if we're to have them, because of what they're doing resulting in a lack of ability to procreate as a species, which is very serious. So it's hard to make light of that, but Super Don will find a way to bring Mothra back into the equation. Maybe we'll ask Brian Hooker if he has an opinion on Mothra versus Godzilla. Coming up. All right, we are at the top of the hour, Super D. I appreciate you, my brother. Thank you. And this is really, it's been a thrill a minute. And I've done shout outs to Brian when he hasn't been here in the last couple of weeks because he called me and texted me. And I'm like a really bad guy, bad friend, too busy to call him and return it. So I was hoping that he would sense the messages I was sending to him on the ethers and on the show, that we will talk off the air about other things too. But for now, let's take a break. We've got some more education from Marjorie Wildcraft on growing food at home. And bringing the power to heal back where it belongs with each and every one of you. Brian Hooker next.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Here we go. We are live now. We've got Brian Hooker standing by. Super Don, very excited to, like I said, I must have done something good recently because you know how it was, like, seemingly years between visits of Brian Hooker, and now it's like I'm measuring the distance in weeks.
I'll tell you, I haven't left him alone. It's like he keeps putting out these articles, and it's just like, you know what, if an article by Brian Hooker comes across my right? desk.
Yes.
I'm going to try and get him on the show. And well, we've just been really lucky, and he's been writing a lot of articles.
We should say because he's been writing, we get to see him more. Well, okay, I'll take it. Brian, how are you doing, buddy? Are you hanging in there doing so much work?
I'm doing well. It is. I feel like a regular. You know, this is like the Johnny Carson show, and I get to be Rich Little or Tony Woods or something like that. So this is. I feel like my seat's still warm from where I left it.
Speaking of like things from the past, our past. You remember growing up and watching the Japanese monster movies?
Yes.
Right.
Oh.
In
lots
fact,
of them.
Back when we were kids, you would have to go like to Saturday and see the matinee of like the latest Godzilla movie.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember Mothra?
Of course. Mothra. Let's see. Mothra was bad. Gamera was the turtle. He was good.
Whoa.
And then obviously Godzilla was good. Gamera is my favorite because I do love turtle meat. And so, he's a tasty little snack. So, yep. No, I remember all of those. And the lips would never match up with the words,
right.
It was because it was dubbed in English and Japanese. So
good
wonderful.
Memories.
Oh, there it is.
Look at Mothra taking on. Is that Godzilla? This is great stuff.
It is.
Super Don's got
Godzilla.
Some amazing things.
Goodness.
But I mean, has a moth ever flown into your mouth? Well, no, let's stop there. Let's not go there. Okay. Anyway, so let's go on to the real reason you're here. And again, thank you for that bit of brevity or levity. That's the word. Levity, Super Don, on Mothra. I like it. I appreciate it.
Mothra, yes.
But let's dive into a very serious issue. And of course, sudden infant death syndrome. Now, there was a point in time where I concluded, without evidence other than observational, what I've been learning about vaccines early on as a homeopath, that the likeliest culprit of sudden infant death syndrome would be a toxicological assault or undue burden that a body wasn't able to handle in infancy, right? And what could that be at the time of infancy, by and large, in SIDS? You said, well, what were well baby visits all about? What are they all about today if they're still happening? Measuring the circumference of the head and then injecting them with foreign proteins, antigens, DNA and RNA from animals or aborted fetal cells, heavy metals, mercury, aluminum. How about adjuvants that aggravate the immune system? All of these things in an infant, in fact, if we understand immunology, doesn't even have its own immune system fully matured, not even close, to be able to develop antibodies like they have B shot. So is there so much, I would say, stupidity involved in injecting these infants, yet that I concluded that it's likely one day we're going to find out it's the shots are somehow related, the childhood shots, well baby visits related to SIDS. And if I'm not mistaken, what you have published with Neil Miller is a correlation, at least maybe indicating causation between those well baby visits, or if I can just differentiate and just say the vaccines given in infancy and SIDS.
You hit the nail on the head. In fact, SIDS was really unheard of, and Neil Miller published a paper very, very recently in Toxicology Reports. I'm going to give you the link for the show, because the paper is an open source journal, so anybody can read the paper. You don't have to have a subscription to the journal. But what Neil has done is he's looked at the VAERS database, that's a Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System database, and he's looked at all infant deaths and then all infant deaths reported as SIDS, and he's looked at the timing of the death in relationship to the last vaccine received. And if there was no relationship between SIDS and vaccination, then you would expect that the timing would be sporadic, that it would be, you know, occasionally here, occasionally there, but there would be just sort of a smooth horizontal curve that would represent the timing between vaccination and the death. No correlation whatsoever. But instead, what he finds is that the deaths cluster around the well baby visits when children are being vaccinated, to the tune of that over 2,600 deaths that he's monitored off of this database, 58% of those deaths occur within 3 days of vaccination. 78% of those deaths occur within 7 days of vaccination. And this is over a 60-day window. He's actually monitoring between 60 days before death all the way to death. And he finds that these tight relationships exist, where if a child is vaccinated, then the propensity, if they're going to die of SIDS, they're going to die within 3 days.
Wow. And then the secondary phase of 7 days, 78%. Right. I mean, so basically 8 out of every 10 are within 7 days of these so-called well baby visits and vaccination. So what do we say as far as plausible probability?
When you look at the rate of SIDS in these close windows versus the rate of SIDS in the background when there's no relationship to vaccination, then the what we would call the odds ratio or the relative risk around vaccination is at least 3 to 1. Hmm. So the odds that a baby would die of SIDS outside of this range is 1, inside this range is 3. So they're 3 times more likely to die of SIDS in relationship to a well baby visit. And if you spread that out, then the odds ratios become astronomical. They get much, much higher.
Do we have the link to the actual peer-reviewed article, or is it just the article that the Defender has written on it? I think it's hyperlinked actually in the Defender
paper. It is hyperlinked in the Defender article.
Let me just open that up.
That's correct.
So there it is on Science Direct. Vaccines and sudden infant death, an analysis of the VAERS database 1990 to 2019 and a review of the medical literature. Now, when we think about, and we go through this all the time with your peer-reviewed articles, you know, and you said Neil Miller is he's just horrible, awful about this, and in a good way. In other words, he is challenging the paper as you go along to go, wait, they're going to get us on this. What about the issue of VAERS itself? Because we've seen a lot of throwback on VAERS in the era of the deaths that are being reported following so-called COVID shots. I know it's not the subject of the study right now that we're talking about, but the trend in terms of denigrating or somehow, let's say, reducing the impact of anybody going to VAERS and using that as statistically relevant data. Do you follow what I'm saying? As an attack point? Yeah,
I do. But the problem there is you can't really use that argument because all of these reports are verified medically. Whenever you report to VAERS, then they want the medical records. So there's nobody that's actually making up. There isn't what we call recall bias, where a parent is blaming a vaccine, so they fudge the data or the information. It's all based on medical records that are submitted to VAERS. So these are very, very high likelihood. And not only did Neil look at all infant deaths, infants age one or below, but he looked at deaths reported as SIDS, and he found the same result in both of these categories. In addition to that, the CDC themselves, they will publish on the VAERS database. They use the VAERS database in order to get trends and to do trend analysis to see if new adverse events are starting to pop up. So if the CDC is relying on VAERS, then they can't have it both ways. They can't criticize a study that uses VAERS in one breath and then turn around and use VAERS in their study in another breath.
Well, I think that, would you agree that those that are supporting a unquestionable acceptance, a blind acceptance to new technologies of injection, are in fact trying to claim that VAERS is not relevant anymore? I mean, you've heard this. I mean, even though you're saying, how can they do one, or they are doing it, or they're attempting to do it?
Well, again, you know, this is the CDC's gold standard, and in part, it was an answer when the liability shield was erected against vaccine manufacturers. Congress mandated that adverse events be recorded. Mm-hmm. Now, they're recorded poorly. They're underreported because there is no mandatory reporting on the VAERS database. And so there's very, very few records. However, the records themselves are robust. They are reviewed by medical professionals at the CDC. And if anything, the CDC is going to err on the side of making vaccines look better in the VAERS database, because they're the ultimate arbiter of what appears on this database. Not everything that's submitted to VAERS actually appears on the database.
Right. Now, in this article, we have it linked up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com today with Brian Hooker and Neil Miller, another peer-reviewed article being published here. Highlights include additive or synergistic toxicity may occur following multivalent vaccination. Infant deaths post-vaccination are often misclassified as SIDS or suffocation in bed. Of all reported SIDS cases post-vaccination, 75% occurred within 7 days. 75%, folks. Inflammation, cytokines in the infant medulla act as neuromodulators, causing prolonged apneas. I want you to explain that in just a moment as well. And adjuvants that cross the blood-brain barrier may induce fatal disorganization of respiratory controls. I mean, there's some devastating bullet points that are found as highlights in this article. They're lowlights for the medical profession and what they've been able to do or hide. But what do you mean in this bullet point? Inflammatory cytokines in the infant medulla act as neuromodulators, causing prolonged apneas.
Well, the inflammatory cytokines are actually shutting down cells that are responsible for the respiration response. Okay, so in the medulla is responsible for respiration. Then because the inflammatory response is systemic, it goes all throughout the body. It's systemic in the brain, it's systemic in the liver, it's systemic in the lungs, it's systemic everywhere. So the neurons that are controlling the breathing have this additional stressor of these inflammatory cytokines. They tend to shut down. They go into if you want to use Transformers technology here, stasis lock. Okay. So the cells aren't functioning properly. If they're not functioning properly, then the breathing then becomes erratic and slows down to a kind of a state of apnea, of sleep apnea. Well, sleep apnea is when, you know, usually it's associated with airway closure. Here it's associated with lack of respiration. And so suffocation can occur regardless of whether the baby is prone or, you know, if the baby is laying down on its chest or if the baby is laying down on its back. Doesn't, you know, as Neil points out, the CDC started in the 1990s, the Back to Sleep campaign. And they said, oh, well, we're going to solve SIDS because SIDS is suffocation because too many parents are laying the babies on their stomachs and they're suffocating. And Neil basically blows that out of the water and shows that, yes, they showed a decline in SIDS deaths, but then all infant deaths actually went up, okay, as the vaccination schedule expanded through the 1990s, then SIDS actually got worse during that time period because there were more prolonged apneas. There were more exposures to adjuvants and other components of vaccines that can change respiration.
So let's acknowledge that sudden infant death syndrome as a syndrome, as a defined, here's what we call it, SIDS, is basically an end result of death by inexplicable causes, or maybe idiopathic, if we to use the technical term in medicine,
sure,
when they claim they don't know the cause. SIDS is a catch-all, is it not? And what Neil Miller and what you've done to help provide here is some semblance of, let's get beyond this idiopathic context and say, hey, maybe there's a link that could be looked into a little bit closer, because there might be an explanation for a lot of these SIDS deaths. And if you were to say, just from a detached perspective, you have no opinion on whether vaccines are good or bad, and you find out that the mystery of SIDS may be related to some event in 75% of the cases within 1 week's time.
Right.
Let's just say we didn't know what it was. We found out that something happened, and within a week, 75% of the children died. Now we go back to, what was it that happened on that day within 7 days? And you find out it is this injection, this vaccination, or series of? Should this not be front page news? Should this not be congressional hearing time? 75% within 1 week?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we need, you know, more additional study on this. And we need, you know, the mechanistically, this has been put together scientifically stepwise. They've done sleep studies on infants to show that these apneas do follow vaccination. And so when you look at the mechanism that talks about here and that others have proposed regarding vaccination and SIDS, you can see that it's been scientifically tested and scientifically affirmed. What's missing is the large database that we all as taxpayers pay into at CDC. That's the Vaccine Safety Data Link, which does have death data. They have what's called a death file for every patient that dies. And so it would be very, very easy to look at the vaccination history of these infants and not only look at the timing of vaccination and SIDS death, but also look at what vaccines have more of a propensity to cause SIDS death. So this could be prevented. This all could be prevented. It's just the CDC is reluctant or recalcitrant or name your adjective. You know, they will not look at this because the final official words is vaccines don't cause SIDS.
Well, let me bring in my annoying producer, Super Don, for a moment. I call him annoying, not out of derogatory way, because he's like, he's the critical thinker in terms of the strategy of the other guy, the other side, you know, when they kind of, and again, you and Neil have also pushed back on your own article, say, all right, where will they attack this? Obviously they don't want this out. You know, the only weird good news about this is in the case of what we're going through COVID crazy time, there's less focus on an article like this manifesting because it's not in the news cycle, not likely to get picked up. So they might leave it alone. I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
But Super Don, I ask you, you know, I laid it out there after I'm seeing this, I'm going, all right, in 1 week's time, the mystery of SIDS has now been connected to an event within 7 days. What is that event? The well baby visit, aka the shot sequence, or and then SIDS 7 days, within 7 days, 75%. Super D, what comes to mind when you see something linked like that? I mean, how do you what do you do? Again, I already mentioned the attack on the VAERS database, which they're trying to do as one way to go
right.
about it. What do you see, Super D? What do you see?
Well, again, I think what we're establishing is definitely a correlation, correct?
Correct.
But it does not establish causation. And so I think the first thing they're going to go is correlation is not causation. That's going to be the number one thing that they're going to throw out there. Then they would probably jump into the study itself and try and pick it apart and try and figure out some way to discredit it. Or say that, you know, there's flaws here, there's flaws there, you know, type thing.
But as I say,
that's usually what they do. I have a lot of
comfort knowing that Neil and, Brian really picked their own papers apart because they know so much from experience now. All of the things that are going to be attacked and reasons why and how and all of that. And yet I see this, again, another watershed moment. I think of our buddy Liam Sheff being alive and seeing this as well. He would be very impressed. But also maybe like Superdon saying, dude, remember when Vax came out and we were all thrilled and excited that this information was going to be revealed, disseminated? Liam bummed me out. He says, it's not going to change anything. It's not going to change anything. I'm like, Liam, come on, really? But it turns out it didn't change a lot. Certainly it brought to light something that was not spoken about, and it brought people together, right? So it's not a zero-sum game, because a lot of people have come out and told their stories because of it. But in terms of the power structure, acquiescing and going, Brian, you're right. Neil, you're right. We've got to now retool. It's like, is that likely to happen? Well, not tomorrow, but it's still one of the chinks in the armor being, you know, dismantled before our very eyes.
Right. Right. And we're chipping away at that particular edifice. You know, the officials at the CDC, FDA, and the HHS in general are going to go down with the ship. They have too much to lose. They've invested in these lies, lie upon lie, too long. And so, you know, they're not going to concede. A good friend of mine who's a pastor at the church that I attend said, look, you know, the CDC is not going to ever come down on the side of saying that vaccines cause autism. And he said that to me point blank in his office. And I had a realization that my focus was never to get the CDC to admit that vaccines caused autism. They would not do that. I mean, they would take that particular secret to the grave.
Right.
But in order to raise the question, then I am giving society, and this is not me being overblown or having an inflated ego. Whenever you raise that question, you're giving society a gift, and you're giving them an alternative to think, okay, beyond, you know, the status quo, beyond the official narrative, and think something different. And then go ahead and use your own critical thinking skills and look through that and see, do you get a check in your own spirit, as your own spirit man, as there's something wrong here?
Yeah, and I see that the peeling off of even the medical professionals is happening. That they've been able to go along to get along for only so long. Some have been hoodwinked and completely programmed. I recognize and acknowledge that. But some people do wake up from that programming. It's not that nobody wakes up. It happens. And one by one by one, the more they push these so-called vaccine mandates in COVID crazy with the experiments that they are likely going to approve, even though they're undergoing clinical trials for another year or two, there's more and more evidence that PhDs and MDs are going, there is something amiss here that I can no longer be party to. And that's, again, maybe it's a war of attrition in a sense, but even though they're not first adopters, we welcome them into the fold.
Right.
You know, we're not going to denigrate them for taking so long to get here. That doesn't serve anybody's benefit or purpose other than if we're going in it for ego's sake. That's not why you're there. That's not why I'm here. That's not why Neil Miller's doing his thing. But I see that the differences in terms of, you know, thinking back to when Liam was still with us talking about these things, not changing ultimately that big issue. It doesn't happen like that. Although at a certain point, after many years of little thing you give them, little thing, then suddenly there's the flip, and that's the consciousness shift, and everything that happened preceding it mattered, and it made all the difference in the world. But it didn't appear to change anything until boom, the 100th monkey effect, as they call it, happens.
Exactly. Exactly. And we look at the individuals that have come out because COVID-19 is forcing this issue. It's forcing the government's hand, and it's forcing the question. And on the side of raising caution and raising red flags regarding massive societal vaccination, we have entities like the America's Frontline Doctors, okay, who are filing suit, who are fighting this in court. And these are physicians, these are medical professionals. And on the other side, we have Jennifer Aniston, who decided that she's not going to like her anti-vax friends anymore. So, you know, if you look at the battle from that perspective, it's quite ludicrous to see these medical professionals who are putting their livelihoods on the line in order to treat vaccine injury, in order to speak out so other people don't get injured. And yet then we have some type of talking head because they weren't on a 90s television show that is going to wave her magic wand and make everything better.
Super Don, is there any truth to the rumor that reruns of that 90s show coming back when they replay it? It's now called Unfriends. Is that true?
I haven't seen that, but I'll have to look into that.
Thanks to Jennifer Aniston. Yeah. Unfriend. Yeah. I unfriend you. I unfriend you, Jennifer. You don't want to be around people who didn't get the vax, man. I'm sorry, Jennifer. You're beautiful, you're talented, you're funny, but you're a moron. I'm just saying.
No doubt. Her intellect is staggering. It is just you know, amazing that she's come up with that and sacrificed of her own self and of her own Rolodex.
It's sad. It's sad.
It is. It is. I shed tears. I lit a candle for Jennifer Aniston when I read the first article about her.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The lovely Jennifer Aniston. Where have you gone? All right. Well, let's say where we're going and where Brian Hooker is going, the Health Freedom Expo, October 2nd and 3rd. Brian is one of the featured keynote speakers who will be with us there for that amazing weekend of people who love health freedom and healing liberty and scientific integrity and correct. Constitutional limitations on our government. All of that coming together for a sensational weekend outside of the Chicagoland area at Tinley Park. Go to TrinityHealthFreedomExpo.com, TrinityHealthFreedomExpo.com. I'll be there speaking. I'll be moderating panels. We'll have a booth there. We'll be recording, broadcasting things as well. And then, Brian, 3 weeks later, you'll be joining us again in Nashville, Tennessee for the Truth About Cancer live event as well.
That is correct. The Truth About Cancer live event. A wonderful event that is starring Robert Scott Bell, and with a black tie event, we get dressed up.
Yes, we do.
And have a big shindig there. We have some other headliners, including, of course, Ty and Charlene Bollinger. Now Randy Jackson from the Jackson Five, and you know, we used to watch 24/7 Disney at in my house because it was safe. It used to be, it's not safe anymore, but it used to be safe. So we are big fans of Lee Allen Baker, who is the mom from a show called Good Luck Charlie, who was a wonderful, wonderful show. And she's a health freedom advocate. She will be there. I will be starstruck as ever and need to get a selfie with her as well as my selfie with Robert and Super Don. So it's going
to
be.
We can get our Super Don out of his chair and get him out to one of these events. We'll have to see.
Nice.
But it'll be lovely. But you're actually closer to him than I am, I think, proximity wise. So we got to get together and have some kind of cookout or something. But also, if we talk off the air, which I know we will between now and then and other things, do not ask me for fashion advice. It will be not one of the areas of expertise that I claim to have.
Nice. I've seen pictures of you at the black tie event. Very dapper.
All because of my wife, not me. I was like, honey, does this look good? Yeah. You're okay with that.
Okay.
Or if she gives me that squirrely look and rolls her eyes, I'm like, no, I don't think I should wear that. So we have good support systems in that regard. But yeah, looking forward to that. Also, again, shout out to our friends at Trinity School of Natural Health, trinityschool.org. If you go to the show notes at robertscottbell.com, you'll also see a wonderful picture, the headline picture of me and Brian. Actually, two different pictures. I don't know if they were from the same year at the it was at Autism One, the conference that we were all at together. One broadcasting live and the other one, as I scroll back down, I'm showing everybody just hanging out together. We almost dressed alike in this shot where we have like a kind of a, was it like a light beige type sport jacket and tie? Looks great.
Absolutely. I don't know if we meant to do that or if it was just a happy coincidence. Maybe.
I like it. We'll have to plan to wear the same thing, right?
There you go.
It's like what friends do, and my wife is rolling her eyes right now. Again, you link up, and there are all kinds of banners that we want to support, including, again, Trinity School of Natural Health. You know, it's amazing to hit a PhD level education. It really is. And Brian Hooker shows that it can be done with integrity, and you can really utilize the scientific method to do good work, but it's not necessary in order to help or heal people and heal yourself. And the folks at Trinity really understand that. And with a body, mind, spirit connection, great biblical foundation in their training and teaching, it's helping so many people to become better healers. And again, healing is not about treating disease. It's about, as I argue, reconnecting you with your divinity. And Trinity has that as part of its mission. And every 4 weeks, new programs start up. Enrollment specialists can be reached at 800-428-0408. Option 2, 800-428-0408. And I even have a lecture on demand. There are some great ones. And my lecture on demand is available. You just click on that, Clinical Homeopathy 101 Plus, giving you ways to address the real culprit in terms of physiological challenges, damage, or let's say dysfunction or stress to the elimination system, the assimilation system, and free radical and inflammation pathways in the body. And I deal with that homeopathically, but there are many ways to get there for those of you who want to learn more. That's available at trinityschool.org. So, Brian, again, I thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Going through this article is just, again, I'm just now seeing it for the first time today in more depth. So I'm going to go through it some more. But it's very interesting that you've been able to hit such a number. I mean, if I was to say a predictive number, just thinking about what I had determined long before this because of my experience in homeopathy and seeing injury due to vaccine, I don't even know what I would have assessed in terms of speculating. What is the day or week time frame from those baby shot schedules to SIDS manifestation? And this work, as far as I know, unless you know of others, is the first one to quantify a numerical, a number, basically, based on days or weeks in terms of manifestation of the so-called SIDS thing. Is there something else that you built your maybe hypothesis on, or Neil did, to say, hey, look at this time frame. This is likely where we're going to see most of the impact.
Neil would, when he goes into some type of study like this, he will set aside all biases. And so if you look at, he looked at a 60-day window between before the onset of SIDS, before the death. And if it was just a random average over that 60-day window, of that 2,600 cases, then 50% of them should occur within 30 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Half of 60 is 30.
Right.
Last I checked. Okay. So instead, half of the SIDS cases are occurring within 3 days of vaccination. So that's a real, if this was happening at random, mm-hmm, and there was no relationship, that cutoff day for 50% would be 30 days. But instead, the real cutoff is 3 days. So it gives us at least something else to look at, because we're seeing an order of magnitude greater response from the vaccination, mm-hmm, than you would expect if it was a random result. So it's 10 times greater.
Yeah. And with all the scientific, let's say, integrity, as Super Don brought this up,
right,
concludes, while the findings in this paper are not proof of an association between infant vaccines and infant deaths, they are highly suggestive of a causal relationship. And I think that even Super Don would agree with that, even though he might have a bias. But I think his bias is trying to scrutinize to a scientific integrity type level, and also being aware of what those that have a bias for vaccines without fail would likely push back on. So the conclusion, while I would say very damning to the vaccine schedule, especially in infancy, you can't say, look, Brian Hooker and Niels Miller's article that was published, peer reviewed, is proof beyond a reasonable doubt that it definitely is, that, right? Even if I may have a bias and perspective and acknowledge it, I think it's kind of hard to deny a direct link, even if we can't fully explain it or validate it with this article. But it certainly demands, as I said, let's just say they did this analysis. Neil did this, you did this analysis. And what did you find within 7 days of, I don't know, let's say, what else could infants be exposed to that's less controversial? Oh, I know. within 7 days of a visit to the health food store. No, I'm just saying, not, they're not even right. about a product. It's like no. all of these, 58% within 3 days of visiting a health food store with their mother, their newborn, they suddenly had SIDS. Do you think that suddenly that would be like a front page news everywhere and congressional hearings would be like, what are infants being exposed to at health food stores? Within 3 days, they're dying. Immediately, you would see this headline and congressional hearings, or within 7 days, 75% or more. You're like, right. what the heck? And nobody bats an eye, and likely nobody or few people will bat an eye, certainly from a mainstream medical perspective or reporting perspective from the mainstream media, about such an association, which doesn't make the claim that, oh, it's definitive. But hey, look at this. This is weird, huh? Within 3 days, this, within 7 days, this. Maybe we ought to look at this, see what's going on. Maybe there's something else, a confounding factor they didn't fit. No, it'll be deny, 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 attack, attack, attack. Virus has nothing to do with anything. But again, perspective is in order, because if you put anything else besides the vaccines that happen at a well baby visit as the 3 and 7 day mark, it likely would garner front page headline news.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in the United States has the worst first day, first year infant mortality rates in the developed world. Absolute dead last. We also have the most bloated vaccination schedule. Second would probably be Australia, who also does not have a good record in terms of infant mortality. And so we need to be able to look at this and make and take the honest question. But as you can see, even with COVID-19, vaccines always get a pass. Vaccines always get the pass. Couldn't be the vaccination. Oh, you know, with the Delta variant of COVID, we're seeing breakthrough cases, but you should still get vaccinated, because somehow it's going to, you know, we're going to wave our magic fairy dust and it's going to give you some level of protection, even though that's preposterous.
Well, and, you know, I just preposterous is an interesting word to use, because it is preposterous to deny a link at this point. Even if you haven't identified or validated causality, the link is so strong that, again, I'm trying to figure out absurd things that you would explain away this that they would be okay with. But as you point out, the third rail of medical politics has always been vaccination in my lifetime. You can't right. question it. You can't challenge it. Anything but that. You could say it's just a mystery, or it's likely anything else. Like you said, you could say it's an air duct somehow. Okay, that's okay. But when it comes to the vaccine, anything that calls into question the safety or efficacy is verboten and to be banned, banished, punished, denigrated, suppressed, deplatformed, right. and censored. And yet you have accomplished, again, another analysis with Neil Miller that puts, a chink in the armor that allows perhaps a blade to go in to the sacrosanct vaccine religion, to have them have to finally acknowledge, as reluctant as they are, that they are not manna from heaven, certainly not heaven, but pharmaceutical right. heaven, even, whatever that is.
Right, right. And what we're seeing is, you know, fortunately, at this point, pharma is overplaying their hand. And, you know, we will be foisted on us, will be booster upon booster, that will get FDA approval, and it will be this booster for the Delta variant, it will be this booster for the Lambda variant, and more Pfizer executives will become billionaires. But more of the nation is now asking the question. In one of the polls that I heard recently in the news, 22% of those that responded were identifying themselves as anti-vaccine. Mm-hmm. Which is a really strong word to identify yourself with.
It's their own damn fault for pushing so hard. Tripled, quadrupled, quintupled our numbers of those of us who came to the conclusion that there is no place in a healthy society for toxic injections of the variety that they come out with and now transition into mRNA technology, which is maybe even worse. We'll see as it right. plays out. But yeah, we're looking at an increased number. Right now, they've said 30% of the adult population in America has not gotten the jab. They're planning right. to peel off some of that percentage when they approve the vaccines or so-called vaccines for beyond experimental use authorization, based on what? Oh, the data we're gathering, ignoring all of the VAERS data that they now say doesn't mean anything.
Right.
At the same time, realizing and recognizing, as we pointed out, that if they do so within the next weeks, as Fauci is praying or hoping for, I don't know that the guy prays anymore, but hoping for, that they will still be undergoing clinical trials for another year or two, which I'm still trying. I mean, Super Don has explanations about how they're going to get away with it, what they're going to say. But what do they say when we point out, and many in the medical and scientific world point out, wait a second, you've approved an experimental use authorization and just transitioned it to a full-on licensure and approval, even though it's still undergoing phase three clinical trials? What explanations can you make, or excuses that they'll make, beyond that, oh, it's just real-world data, whatever that means?
The clinical trials will be ongoing, and, you know, Fauci is really pushing the approval and says approval will happen for at least one of the vaccine variants within weeks. But, you know, I don't think that's going to stand up in court. You can't really approve a product that hasn't cleared phase three efficacy and safety trials. And, you know, but unfortunately, what we're finding out, even with the Department of Justice saying that mandates are OK, somehow they decreed, I doubt they have a copy of the Constitution there, but they decreed that mandates were OK.
Well, with a waiver, the president has just waived the Constitution, no longer applies here. So it'll be OK.
Oh, OK. OK. I didn't know about that waiver. I lost that with his beige suit. So I'm not really sure where that waiver came from, but okay, I guess I will trust
Department of Justice fantasies once again for totalitarian dictatorships.
Right, and you know we're seeing the effects. And there are multiple demonstrations around the state in California where medical professionals are pushing back because Gruesome Newsom has basically said that state workers and healthcare workers have to have the vaccine by September 30th. But the medical community is now pushing back. They're now up in arms. So pharma is overplaying their hand, and people will get to a point. I'm not sure all people, mm-hmm. but a significant portion of the population has already voted with their feet when you say that 30% of the adult population in the United States is unvaccinated, hasn't even gotten one shot.
Right. So we'll see where that goes. I know what they're intending to do. We cover it all the time. Hey, Super Don, by the way, did you figure out the percentage I asked you? It was like 162 of the sheriff deputies in San Francisco Bay Area out of a certain number. If you divided those together to figure out what was the percentage
in San Francisco, it's roughly 19%.
So it's about 20% of the sheriff deputies that are saying we don't want the shot. And yet they're in a rock and a hard place there, because if they let them go or fire them, they don't have enough people already.
No.
So it's you're right. Even in California. And by the way, are you watching the Governor Newsom recall election? I guess you could say. Have you been paying attention to that?
I am. September 14th, the recall election is coming up. You know, he has overplayed his hands over and over and over again. But I don't know, you know, I have faith in God, but I don't really necessarily have faith in the population of California to do the right thing.
There's historical precedent there.
Right. Yeah. They seem to, regardless of the issue, be a party line state. I live in a very, very different part of California. It's very libertarian. It's very red for being a part of a blue state in general. You know, the North State is very red. And so we can get away with a lot of things and people look the other direction up here in Shasta County where I live.
Sure.
But you know, I will have my eyes glued to the TV. I have a little PTSD from the general election that happened,
Super now, we've got some viable candidates that could make some changes. You were talking about Larry Elder. Is he making some waves in California?
I believe he's definitely leading. He's the leading candidate right at the moment. It's still way early on the situation, but he's leading. Yeah,
it's very early on the situation. And it's my understanding that you actually have to recall the governor and then have an election.
Special election.
Recall.
Oh, yeah. So basically Newsom in this recall election has to be voted out in a sense.
It's a vote of no confidence.
Okay.
Okay, gotcha. So it's not like we put up a general election on September 14th. We still have a few steps to go from there.
Okay.
There's precedence. This is how another governor, Gray Davis, was recalled several years ago in the state of California. So there's a strong precedence for this type of recall happening.
All right. So, well, let's go from the political to the international community and look at Iceland on COVID-19, okay, if you don't mind. COVID-19 in Iceland. Vaccination has not led to herd immunity, says chief epidemiologist. Now, that he should be banned because the WHO said the only way to achieve herd immunity now is through vaccination. They've eliminated the whole history of what they call herd immunity by naturally burning out something that existed in a big way, and then it goes away. Now, I also point out that herd immunity is kind of a legal fiction based on collectivism, because it's only about individuals getting sick or getting well ultimately. But when you're herded together, they come up with conclusions that lead you to believe you're not an individual and your immune system doesn't matter, when it does. But what do you think or perceive of a big statement like this from the chief epidemiologist of a nation, Iceland, saying the vaccine didn't lead to what we were looking for?
The vaccine, this is quite the admission, and Iceland had a very, very high compliance rate of vaccination, I think upwards to 70% of the entire population, which would be a greater fraction of the adult population, was vaccinated. And that, you know, in some calculations should have been enough for community immunity or herd immunity, but yet it's blowing through the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. The, you know, I don't know if it's the Delta variant or the Lambda variant or what variant is blowing through Iceland, but it's making absolutely no difference, vaccination status. And we're seeing that. And I think that if the CDC was honest, and if we actually looked at all the data at state public health departments, we could say the same thing in the United States. There are many, many different breakthrough cases. They always will soften the blow by saying, oh, well, there's less hospitalizations. I've yet to see data that would really stand up to say that there are less hospitalizations among the vaccinated. You know, in fact, the data from Provincetown actually flies against that. But this is quite an admission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to strengthen my perspective on what I'm witnessing and hearing and seeing at the peeling off of medical professionals from this religion of science, if you will, specific now to the COVID jabs.
Right.
There's a social media network and app called Doximity, which was designed just for doctors. I don't know, do they let PhDs in there, Super Don, or is it just MDs or DOs that toe the party line? Do you know?
It's a good question. I'm not quite sure. I know
this is news to me. This is new stuff.
Doximity. Okay. So it was a social network designed, developed for doctors only. So you had to really qualify and have your credentials scrutinized before you were in. And so this was allowing for bulletin board discussion, interaction, social network kind of thing for doctor to doctor. And this headline over at CNBC, the social network for doctors is full of vaccine disinformation. I'm wondering, did Super Don and RSB infiltrate and fake our way in with fake IDs? No, we had no idea about this until we learned about it. It says doctors on the industry networking site Doximity are finding their news feeds inundated with anti-vaccine comments from fellow physicians. Wait a second. Right. They're the true believers. I thought they're the arbiters of what's real, what's right, what's science. It's just amazing that, by the way, it held its initial IPO, Doximity, and is now valued over $10 billion. Holy camoly.
Wow.
But think about that.
And it's an arbiter of disinformation.
Yeah. Now, how are they getting away with that? Because, again, there's no evidence that they're pointing to, Super Don, of our infiltration of it, right? They're not saying the dirty disinformation dozen got a hold of the Doximity app and just ruined it for everybody.
In order to join Doximity, you must be a U.S. licensed physician, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, medical student, pharmacist, or clinically licensed healthcare professional.
Wow. Well, seriously, though, we can't get in. So how are they? I mean, they're letting all these people in that have licenses and they're real honest to goodness medical people, and they're still spreading disinformation. How could this be? I thought they were the smartest of the smart.
Oh, yeah. I have been told by medical professionals several times very, very quietly of those mainstream medical professionals, when they find out that I didn't receive the COVID vaccine, I've been told that based on epidemiology and based on the mortality of COVID for my age group, I made the right choice. Mm-hmm. I absolutely made the right choice from that. In the next breath, they'll probably recommend another vaccine like shingles, you know, which I'm getting up there in years. And so they want me to get my shingles shot so I can get shingles for sure. But,
don't
you know,
it.
it's, very quiet. And I think when the licensing boards are looking the other direction, medical doctors are saying something very, very different than the official party line.
Yeah. Well, and they thought, of course, they had a social network that was beyond scrutiny and censorship. And yet the reports now coming out is that people using Doximity, again, who tipped NBC off? Did maybe it was one of their correspondents that is also a MD, because they have those going in and going, oh, look at this. But this is not a good story for them to cover, because what it reveals is that the true believers that they thought they had in the bag are leaving the church. Now, this is not the first time we've reported on it, because back at, what was it, Superdome? We actually played video/audio of the concerns. I think it was out of the World Economic Forum or something, when they were talking about the danger of doctors now not believing certain things, or speaking about the dangers of the experimental jabs and such. And not, you know, so what I'm saying here is, this is now more evidence to what we've been reporting, that the doctors themselves are having questions now, and it's harder to dismiss them other than to say it's disinformation within Doximity. But by who? Only people that can get in there are pretty much doctors.
The medical professionals.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know who is a doctor who basically every time I check my social media feed is telling me to disobey is Dr. Rand Paul.
Yes.
Dr. Rand Paul. He's telling me that the way out of this mess is to disobey. And I'm strengthened by that. I thank you, Rand Paul, for telling me to stick to my guns and to not obey the status quo, and to, you know, when my university resist or whatever tells me I have to get a vaccination, say, no, I'm not going to do that.
Civil disobedience. It may come down to that, Super Don, right? As you see what they're trying to do here, mandate an experimental use authorization. It has its limits. Now we'll get it approved by FDA despite it being in clinical trials. As Dr. Professor Brian Hooker points out, it will be challenged because it is unprecedented to fully license something that's still undergoing phase three clinical trials. It's that's been my argument all the time, that it's not going to be so easy, because more medical people, more PhD people are going to go, what have you done? You've approved something still undergoing clinical trials. It's not going to be a slam dunk, Super Don. It's not.
We'll see. We will see.
The paperwork.
It's
going to
be an interesting. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting, it's like I keep saying, we're going to have lots to talk about the next month or two.
No shortage of discussion points.
But, you know, I want to encourage those people listening, it's time to disobey. It's past time to disobey. And so if you are in between a rock and a hard place, I feel for you. I am not in that particular place, but your bodily autonomy is much, much more important than your livelihood. It's much, much more important. You need to be alive to take care of your family. You need to be alive to take care of your children. And, you know, by foisting more and more injections of toxic substances on us, it's not in line with good health. It's not in line with bodily autonomy, and it's not in line with good spirituality.
Yeah, listen, folks, stand up for your autonomy, bodily autonomy. The same folks that used to be for that are now against it. What do I mean? My body, my choice. What happened to that when it comes to injecting things that you don't want injected into your body? I'm just asking. And yeah, I believe some of the people on the political left are also, just like we're seeing in the doctor community, starting finally to go, ooh, maybe this is a step too far.
Right.
And in fact, will ally with us who may or may not believe in vaccinations at all. And it's irrelevant, except to say we believe in bodily autonomy. We believe in the freedom to say no. We believe in fully informed consent. That is, when we say no, there are no consequences or repercussions from those who want us to get injected. In terms of repercussions or consequences, they might say, well, you're on your own if you get sick, right? Which is also unconscionable, because the argument is like, well, if they don't get the shot and they get sick, we should refuse them access to any medical help at all. Like, it's like, who are these people? What's wrong with them? We don't wish for harm for those that are getting jabbed. We don't wish for harm for the people that do chemo, even though we say, hey, there are other ways to go besides chemo. But unfortunately, they feel often that if we don't go their way, that we should just die and that'd be our just reward. I mean, these people are not very nice people. And I think I'm being nice to say it that way.
No, they aren't. You know, I receive emails. I mean, they're few and far between, fortunately, but emails that basically tell me I should die of some infectious disease or my family member.
These are sad people that would do that. Brian Hooker, we love you and appreciate you. And you're going to be brilliant at the Health Freedom Expo and the Truth About Cancer. I can't wait to get together with you again. And I'm loving that I can measure your appearances in days and weeks instead of months and years.
So good. I got some more articles coming out, so stay tuned.
All right. Well, we'll be back for the bonus
round. I'll be in touch then.
Oh, okay. Super. Thank you. Escape, Brian. You're on the hook. The power to heal is still yours.